from KUER News in Salt Lake City. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, the shape of the election in Utah at this point. Voters, of course, go to the polls on Tuesday, so we'll take some time to talk about what to expect, or at least what to look for. What are the last of the polls telling us? How are the races playing out? How are the ballot initiatives affecting voter interest? Will Utah be swept up in some kind of national electoral wave? We'll have reporters and observers with us, and we'd like to hear from you. So join us after this.
With the KUER app, you'll never have to choose between Doug Fabrizio and a phone call from your spouse. Just hit the pause button and take the call. When you're ready, hit play, and it's back to Radio West. The KUER app lets you pause whatever you're listening to, and you can get a constant feed of BBC News and classical music with our other streams, BBC on KUER and KUER Classical. It's even got an alarm clock, so you can wake up with Diane Mechapinto's Moon Report and Morning Edition. Download the KUER app for iPhone and Android today. It'll help you be a better partner.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Okay, here we go. We're in the final stretch before what seems to be a kind of crucial midterm election. There's been a lot of interest in this midterm for obvious reasons. Some are looking to see if this could be some kind of beginning for some kind of wave for Democrats. Maybe they'll reemerge on the national scene. It's being talked about also as a referendum on President Trump's first years in office. Most Utahns voted for Donald Trump, of course, but he wasn't high on the enthusiasm scale, so it's hard to say exactly what might be driving Utah voters to the polls this year. There are indicators turnout could be kind of high, and there are some high-profile figures and some high-profile races, which we'll talk about. There are some high-profile issues driving interest, of course, medical marijuana and gerrymandering, getting more money for public education. So today in the program, we're going to offer some final things to think about as you head to the polls on Tuesday. And, of course, we'd like to hear from you. Have you already voted? Because a lot of people have. If you haven't, what are your reasons for waiting? Have you voted in past midterms? Does this year feel different in some ways, and why? Email us at radiowest@kuer.org. You can join us on Facebook and Twitter as well. Joining us on the program, Morgan Lyon-Cotty is with us, Associate Director of the University of Utah's Hinckley Institute of Politics. She's worked in politics and policy in Utah for a long time now, and she's here. Long time. Hi, welcome.
Thanks for having
me. Thanks for being back with us. Matt Canham is back with us, Senior Managing Editor of the Salt Lake Tribune. Before that, he covered government and politics for the paper. And Matt, welcome back to you.
Thank you.
Nicole Nixon is with us, political reporter for KUER. Welcome back to you.
Hi.
And Julia Ritchie back with us, KUER's senior political editor.
Pleasure.
Okay. Let me start with just some sort of broad stuff. I'm wondering how you are all, as you're looking at what's been happening in the last couple of months, how are you characterizing the midterm election sort of political stuff going on this year? Is it typical? Is there something unusual? I mean, there's a lot unusual, but is there something different? I mean, what are you seeing so far?
I don't think it's typical at all. And I think the big, oh my gosh, there's so many big things. I can't even think of one. But one of the ones that comes to mind is just the registration and the excitement people have over the election. Everything from Democrats being more energized and campaigning more here in Utah to people registering to vote and looking at not just candidates, but also these issue campaigns that are really motivating them. That was really broad.
I look at it as there's two different things. There's the national thing that's different, and then there's the local thing that's different. Mm-hmm. Nationally, this is an election about the president, and a lot of midterms are, but this one definitely feels like every single congressional race is nationalized. When we're talking about in the 4th District, which is the one close congressional race we have here, how much of it is Trump versus whether the Democrats take control of the House? When you talk about Mitt Romney and his Senate race, it's what's his relationship with the president? It's all about the national when it comes to these races. And then you look locally, as Morgan was talking about these propositions we have, it's unusual for Utah to have these propositions. Yeah. And it is driving enthusiasm in a way that we haven't seen candidates do, in large part because so many of our contests here are blowouts.
Yeah.
And these are interesting and unique, and I think it's driving a lot of attention.
In some ways, I think this could be a little reductive, but there are parallels to 2010.
when the Tea Party wave started to gain a lot of momentum. And now we have this sort of flip side, the resistance that has gained momentum since Trump's election. So we're kind of seeing the flip side of the coin. When you have a Republican in power, you have a sort of Democratic enthusiasm, just like in 2010, we had a Democratic president and a lot of Republican enthusiasm.
And a particularly polarizing president, too. That's going to change the dynamic a little bit as well. Nicole, what do you say?
I mean, Morgan talked about voter registrations, and we've seen that those have just skyrocketed since compared to the 2014 midterms. I know the same day that Salt Lake County ballots came in the mail, I saw a lot of people on social media posting that they had already filled their ballot and put it back in the mailbox that same day. So I don't think you can underestimate the excitement for people who already have voted regularly in presidential and midterm elections, but I think there's obviously a lot of new voters who are feeling energized as well.
These mail-in ballots, Morgan, you've pointed out a quarter of voters have already voted by mail. It's significant? Is that different?
I think it's significant. One of the things we were watching in 2016 was that in a lot of states, the early mail-in voting wasn't happening at the levels they thought. And that was an indication that a lot of people made up their mind pretty late in that election, which mattered because we had that October surprise with that sort of secondary look at Hillary Clinton's emails. But now with everybody already having their minds up, already being excited, I think that's an indication that hopefully Utah will reverse this trend of having poor voter turnout. But also that, as Nicole mentioned, people have their minds made up. So all of this late in the game politicking, it's only affecting those portion of voters who haven't already turned in those votes.
I think it's also worth pointing out that vote by mail in Utah is still relatively new. Yeah. Salt Lake County did it in 2015, is that right, for municipal elections, and then fine-tuned that a bit in 2016. I think in 2016, a lot of voters weren't sure what to do with those ballots. A lot of people thought it was junk mail and threw it away. So now that we're all getting used to it, it's expanded to most counties in Utah. We'll see. Hopefully that does drive up turnout. I think that's what people are expecting.
Carrie sent this in from Sandy. She says it was easy to vote through the mail. Some people find it intimidating, but doing it from home, not having to figure out where to go, some people might not know. You only have to fill out the little bubble and you can do it. It's fairly easy. It's like taking a test.
And you can have a cheat sheet, too. You can have your internet browser up and look at candidates and research the issues. It's awesome.
So there's been this talk about some kind of wave coming. And then I remember there was this like, oh, a blue wave is coming. And then after the Kavanaugh hearings, you started hearing President Trump talking about maybe there's a red wave coming. What color of wave, if there is one, could you expect for Utah? Like, is Utah being caught up in some kind of wave?
If it's a blue wave, it's a tiny, tiny wave washing onto a red shore.
It's like a ripple.
Yes. I mean, there is a blue wave.
Didn't Gerke say it was a little kiddie pool?
Yeah.
Wave? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's nationally, Democrats are going to do well in a midterm. And you would have thought about that from people who study politics. In a president's first term, the first midterm usually goes to the other party. And so I think Republicans expected Democrats to have gains this year. To the level, we'll see. But some of that we are feeling here. I mean, you look at the 4th Congressional District, which is Representative Mia Love versus Democrat Salt Lake County Mayor Ben McAdams. Donald Trump is not popular in that area, and Ben McAdams is doing pretty well. It's a tight race. That is kind of an indication. I think people who follow Utah politics expect Democrats to do okay in the legislature, but we're talking a couple seats.
Yeah,
this is still a very conservative state, a very Republican state.
I always wonder if anything's going to substantively change. Like, there's movement in the margins, but it seems like not much will. I mean, there are. We'll talk about the 4th Congressional District. That's one in play.
It would take demographic change.
Yeah.
It would take people moving here, which is going to happen over time. We have seen Salt Lake County change, right?
Yeah.
Well, but and Matt, you've written, though, about how Utah County is growing and growing and growing. So that could be a factor. But in addition to demographic change, it also takes decades. Utah didn't become this reliably red state over one election cycle. And the Democratic Party here in Utah tweeted the other day the number of doors knocked and phone calls made comparing 2014, 2016, and this year. And it's an astronomical increase. They're trying to do that hard work of party building. But again, they have to do it in more than just one election. So maybe we'll see a change at the margins. But if the Democratic Party keeps putting these resources, and we do see some of these demographic changes, we could see changes, but it will take a while.
I remember in 2017, shortly after, it was in April, Bernie Sanders and Tom Perez, the chair of the Democratic National Committee, came to red states, including Utah, to say that we are not giving up on you. And I think he mentioned that they were looking at the 4th District, and nobody at the time believed that they were actually going to put any resources into the 4th Congressional District race. Obviously, that was before Mayor McAdams put his name in the ring. But I think that shows that a lot. It was a long shot then, and now it's kind of interesting to see how far it's moved, that it's no longer a long shot.
Okay, so I want to here's something from Michael, who writes from Sandy. He said, I vote every year, but the big driver for me this year is medical marijuana. He said, I'm voting for it. I have two adult sons in foster care due to special needs, and this is obviously something very personal to him. The potential turnout that we're expecting is going to be driven by something like Prop 2, do you guys think?
I think it'll be significant. I think it's a game changer for the mentality of a voter. There are people who are engaged in politics and who support either the Republican or Democratic Party, or maybe are somewhere on the fringe, but like the action of voting in these partisan elections. But there are many people who don't. And I think an issue like medical marijuana breaks that. It becomes personal for people like the person who sent in that comment about someone they know in their life in a way that sometimes who's running for Salt Lake County councilman doesn't really do it.
Yeah.
And I think I expect it to be a significant driver of people coming out to vote, and it will change the demographics of people who vote in other races. But how much, it's hard. One thing, as someone who's covered politics in Utah, I think the mail-in ballot's fantastic. It's interesting, but it makes our job so much more hard to figure out how to analyze, what to expect. It's a different ballgame this year.
And in the poll that the Tribune did with the Hinckley Institute, we asked about those motivations to vote, and the biggest motivation for about a third of voters, it was a proposition, and of course Prop 2 was the one that most of those people mentioned. And I just keep on thinking about that 2016 primary, that Democratic presidential primary. There were people coming out that you normally don't see, especially in primaries, and it was the Berniest crowd that I did not even know existed in Utah. And I keep on just wondering if we will see that again. Bernie obviously was a huge motivator, and I wonder if we will see that medical marijuana crowd that makes the polls look really different this year.
I read this piece on the news polling website, 538, talked about how the abortion issue traditionally animates conservative voters. But this year, it's Democrats, liberal voters, who are being animated by that particular issue, which I think is interesting. And then I wondered how that might apply to Utah, whether or not, like the Kavanaugh factor, which seems to have reanimated some conservative voters, at least nationally. The question is this: do Utah voters follow any of these kind of traditional ideological trends, do you think?
I'm not sure how much people actually I think conservative voters do care about having a conservative judiciary.
Yeah.
I think they care about having conservative judges, at least in the interviews I've done with voters at these rallies. Like, that is a driving factor. As far as the SCOTUS fight, I think it's faded already. And I think that's a reflection of our news cycle in many ways.
You faded nationally too, you think?
I think so.
Yeah.
But I also think that there's no immediate opening on the Supreme Court, at least that we know of. Obviously, we have some older judges on the bench. But that is not going to drive as many people if they don't know that they don't have to immediately fill a vacancy on the court. And it's already done. It's already shifted to the right.
When it comes to the issue of abortion, the only candidate that I know of that has made a big deal of this is Mia Love.
Mm-hmm.
This is an issue that's important to her, and there are many conservative voters, there's some in my family who are single issue voters, and that is their issue.
Yeah.
And if you're not right on that issue, they're not going to look at you. That's ingrained for decades now in politics, and I still think it's a factor in this state.
It's interesting. It seems like I can't tell if Utah voters, and people are always wondering, when you see these polls that you guys have done and we've seen, Utah voters are more inclined to want to pay more for public education, for example. Like, they seem more moderate than a lot of their conservative representatives, at least in the legislature, and maybe that's true in Congress. And it makes me wonder if the makeup of Utah electorate is different in some ways from traditionally conservative places.
I think Utah Republicans look very different than national Republicans. And I think you see that in some of these very major national issues like abortion, like immigration. Even though we are a very conservative state, we are a very consistent Republican vote. We view immigration much more moderately. And even on the abortion issue, we're not all the way. We don't want to completely get rid of abortion. Utah's idea of when life begins is a little different than other Republicans. And
talking about the Mormon Church.
Yeah. I mean, I think in large part because of that Mormon influence. And I think that affects, it might not affect in the long run how we vote, but it affects the language that we hear from our candidates. And then it also affects these policies that we see at the state level.
So how are you all thinking about polling? Because everyone feels burned by 2016 in polling, and it's just more complicated now these days. And I'm wondering what you're seeing and how you're thinking about it, how it's more complicated this time. And the mail-in ballots. I mean, harder to decide what any of that means.
I think as a nation, we need to get more sophisticated in how we look at polling, just like we need to get more sophisticated at how we look at news. There's a lot out there, and you need to be discerning. But you also need to understand what a poll is. It's a snapshot in time. It's mathematical, which means it could be right, it could be wrong. It's a sense of where things stand. And when we look at polling, what I look for is trends in polling, not an individual poll as much as what are we seeing going as a trend, which is why the Tribune with the Hinckley Institute does 4 polls a year. We poll many of the same questions each time to look where are things trending. We also take into account every other poll we see. You know, the Salt Lake Tribune will write about polls that are not our own. And we will see where things are moving. There's some that feel like outliers, and that's because sometimes polls are outliers, and that's okay. But what you're looking for is where are things shifting? And I think what happened in the last election is that the way those polls were talked about made it seem it was definitive.
Yeah.
You know, right now, you mentioned 538. 538 says that Democrats, I think, believe have a 5 in 6 chance of taking the House.
85% right now, yeah.
Well, there's a 15% chance they don't. That's right. Like that means they might not.
Yeah.
There's
Which
still a possibility.
538 really dialed into when they had Hillary at like 75% right. winning. They're like, but we gave her 25% chance of losing people.
But that's like, and that feels like significant, but it's only 1 in 4. Like, you know, like we just had the lottery where everyone rushed out to get a ticket. You had a 1 in 3 million chance of winning, right? Like, that means that Trump had a 1 in 4 in those polls. That's not that much.
Well, and that said, I am so intrigued by the fact that we see so many polls here in Utah right now. The Trib is using the Hinckley poll. KUTV just used a poll or came out with a poll. Desert News is polling again. Utah Policy consistently polls. So even though so many people felt burned and we looked at polls much more critically, we're still so hungry for that information and we want to know where things stand with these elections.
And is it Julia or Nicole mentioning that Nate Silver tweeted out that the 4th district race was one of the most polled, if not the most polled race?
Yeah, he did. I've been impressed with the polling this year, to be quite honest, because as Matt said, we've been able to see how for example, Proposition 2 with medical marijuana has slowly had its support chipped away due to the LDS Church coming out against it. And we've just been able to see that. And we've actually been able to understand some of the issues and races a lot better because we've been able to see exactly what's been happening. And that's why you do need to look at the the polling average and not necessarily just one poll.
And there's some polls that are public, like the one that we do, but all the people involved in these campaigns have their own polls.
Yeah.
So when we do a poll and it feels like something shifted, when we did the medical marijuana poll, we were nervous and we asked the Hinckley Institute to go back into the field again because we were worried those numbers weren't right. They did. The numbers came back the same. We wrote the story. We all braced for reaction. And we heard that everyone's internal polls were about the same, which allows us to go, okay, well, maybe there is some more confidence in this number than there might be otherwise. But sometimes those polls don't get actually publicized.
801-585-WEST is the number to join the conversation. You can email us, radiowest@kuer.org. Okay, let's jump into some of the races. I want to mention most of them, although some of them are more competitive than others. That's a kind way of putting it. The Senate race, not
tactful,
not terribly competitive, we should say. Republican Senator Orrin Hatch is retiring. Of course, five candidates are up replacing him. And just for fairness sake, let's mention Tim Alders of the Constitution Party is running, Craig Boden of the Libertarian Party, Reed McCandless of the Independent American Party, and then the two from the major political parties, of course, Democrat Jenny Wilson and Republican Mitt Romney. What can we say? I mean, it's not terribly competitive, right? What can we say that's interesting about this particular race? I guess one of the questions is how much people are excited about Mitt Romney in Utah. They love the guy, and I'm wondering if that's driving interest. Just what are you noticing about this particular race that's interesting?
I would be interested to see if that actually does drive turnout in Republicans' favor. I know that Mitt Romney has been doing a lot of canvassing and a lot of phone banks for other Republicans running for Congress and for legislative seats and county seats. So we'll see if that helps. I think the excitement, obviously, when he announced, everybody was really interested. But I think after the primary, that kind of diminished a bit. There is a more competitive fourth district race. We've got medical marijuana on the ballot. I think Mitt Romney has faded into the background a little bit, not all the way. I would be interested.
He probably loves that, though, right? I mean, he wants to be
in
the background.
Yeah, I think he's actually been trying to stay out of the news this year.
We saw that this week. I mean, this is intentional. He is acting as the senator. So he is supporting the other Republicans. He doesn't need to put himself out there. Mm-hmm. You had Donald Trump say that he's going to do an executive order to get rid of the birthright citizenship part of our Constitution, which is obviously legally dubious. We had lots of politicians in the state come out against what the president was doing. Mitt Romney said nothing, which is an example that he's just not going to weigh in. Because he knows when he talks now, he's talking essentially as a de facto senator. He doesn't need to.
Which is interesting because I think some of the excitement around his candidacy to begin with is because after the death of John McCain and Jeff Flake leaving the Senate, that there is this this hole, this vacuum for a moral voice, a moral conscience on the GOP side. Mm. And I think that is at least the hope of some Utah voters who will be casting their ballots for him, is that he will step into that role. Of course, he's tried to temper those expectations throughout the campaign.
And he is walking that line very, very tightly. He said a few weeks ago when he was in Arizona that he was never a leader of the Never Trump movement, which I'm not sure any of us really believe that. He gave that speech in 2016. And he said over and over, you know, I agree with the president's policies. When he says things that I disagree with, then I'll call that out. But even during his debate, he said, I don't want to be a gadfly for everything the president says and does every day.
Why would he say that? What does he have to lose?
Well, I think that he has
nothing to lose. Why would he say that?
Well,
it depends on what he wants to gain.
Yeah, I think there is this realization and this resignation now, even from people like Jeff Flake, that the Republican Party is now the party of Trump. He's the president. He's been the president for 2 years. He's accomplishing policy goals, and people are touting things like the tax cut, including Mitt Romney.
The question is, what does Mitt Romney want to accomplish as a senator? He doesn't have to worry about voters in Utah. He's going to win this election by every poll that's been done. So what does he want to accomplish in the Senate? What position does he want to play there? That's why he's making the decisions he's making.
What do you think? What does he want to accomplish?
He doesn't want to just be seen as the foil to the president.
He doesn't want to be a Jeff Flake.
He wants to get something done. He wants to position himself as a leader, not as someone who is alienated by just being the reactionary person to the president. And so he's going to pick and choose his spots. I mean, there are people, including many here in the state, who still think he has a chance to run for president again. So there's a lot of politics that go through his head when he makes a statement or doesn't.
Let's talk about the first district really quickly. Of course, incumbent Representative Rob Bishop never has really faced much of a challenge in his time there. He has three challengers, Eric Elias of the United Utah Party. And I wanted to ask you about the United Utah Party. It's interesting. There's an Adam Davis of the Green Party, and then, of course, the Democrat Lee Castillo. What do you make of the United Utah Party? They're running candidates now in some of these races. Jim Bennett, of course, in that special election for the 3rd District, he was probably the most high profile. Is this some sort of an emerging middle ground party, do you think?
They're certainly trying. They really are trying to position themselves in the middle. So for those moderate Democrats, those moderate Republicans who are sort of disaffected from the more extreme parts of their party. But it also shows what can happen when a third party puts resources into an election. Ellison has put his own money into this. They're fundraising. United Utah is also fundraising for a number of legislative seats where it's pretty intriguing to see the amount of money they've been able to raise. But Eric Ellison, he's also out there. He's canvassing. He's got signs everywhere. When you really put in the work, you can get some votes.
Okay, so Julia, do you think this is Bishop's last race?
Well, he says it is. He is term limited out as chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee, which is something that he's obviously enjoyed being at the top of because he's been able to push through a lot of policy goals of his in the Trump administration's. But he sounded sincere in his debate when he asked voters to give him one last go because this is going to be his last time as chairman of that particular committee. So I don't know if I believe him, but at least that seems to be what he's saying.
And the question is he chairman of that committee? Mm-hmm. I mean, right now it looks like Democrats most likely will take the House, so he would be the ranking member, which is not nearly as fun a position to be in,
right?
As it would be otherwise.
He did say he got along very well with his ranking member too during the debate, so I guess he was foreshadowing. Yeah.
Anything interesting about the 2nd District? Republican Chris Stewart is the incumbent there. There's a Libertarian, Jeffrey Whipple, but the Democrat, Shireen Gorbani. Nicole, you've covered Gorbani. You've knocked doors with her. Mm-hmm. Is she an emerging political figure?
I think so. And the 2nd District, again, overwhelmingly Republican district. Going back to polling, we saw one poll over the summer that saw her move the needle, but then the Tribune came out with another poll that shows that maybe that wasn't a poll that we should be believed. So I'd be interested to see what percent she ends up with. She is a strong candidate, and I think that the blue wave started at the beginning of the year or I guess even last year. And I feel like the Utah Democratic Party is fielding some strong candidates this year, including Shireen Gorbani. She's definitely putting in the work. I spent an hour knocking doors with her on a sweltering July evening, and she's doing that. She was doing that almost every night. She's raising a lot of money through small donations. She always mentions that she's not She's not accepting corporate PAC money like her opponent. With these races in these overwhelmingly Republican districts, I think it'll be interesting to see maybe not Democrats winning, but maybe doing better than they would have done in past midterms.
Like an incremental movement.
Yeah.
And her opponent's just not well known either. That's something that the Tribune has pulled. And people just don't know who their representative is in the 2nd District. I think this is a good example of how the Democratic Party's closing message is on healthcare. And Shireen Gorbani has really pinned her message to healthcare. She has not strayed from that message at all. And because we have a proposition on the ballot to expand Medicaid in the state, it's a good year to be pushing pushing an issue that actually pulls really well with both parties, which is like keeping your Medicare, keeping your Social Security, and having coverage for pre-existing conditions, which are all closing messages for the Democrats.
Mm-hmm. And interesting timing that open enrollment starts today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a break. We have with us Julia Ritchie and Nicole Nixon from KUER News. Julia is the senior political reporter. Matt Canham, senior managing editor for the Salt Lake Tribune. He's joining us. Morgan Lyon-Cotty, associate director of the University of Utah's Hinckley Institute of Politics. Again, you can join us. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'll take a break. Come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER.
KUER's community of sustainers do so much for the station. Because of their ongoing contributions, we're able to bring you award-winning local news, NPR coverage, Radio West, and our own podcasts. Starting at $5 a month, you can be a sustainer too. Then, next time you hear a story you love, you'll know you made it happen. Become a sustainer at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are talking about the shape of the election in Utah. Voters, of course, go to the polls on Tuesday, so we're taking some time to talk about what to expect, or at least what to look for, with Morgan Lyon-Cotty of the Hinckley Institute of Politics, the University of Utah, Matt Canham with the Salt Lake Tribune, Nicole Nixon and Julia Ritchie with KUER News. Andrew writes from Salt Lake City. He said, I've already voted, basically straight ticket Democrat. And he mentioned, this is true, I mentioned that most Utahns voted for Donald Trump, which is not true. He said Clinton and McMullen combined actually got more. I think I was thinking of conservatives,
Trump, or maybe I just got that wrong. He won the state, he got a plurality of votes, but good point.
But he said he did really poorly for a Republican, Andrew's point, and he thinks that will affect the 4th. Do you think that's true? The 4th congressional district, Ben McAdams.
Yes. No, I think that we've seen Donald Trump is not popular in the 4th District. He's below 50%. He's probably closer to 40%. And for a president to be that low, that means there's a lot of sharp feelings and will help Ben McAdams in that race.
Well, and Doug, you were asking earlier about why Romney isn't coming out after Trump with every single one of these comments. And statewide, especially among Republicans, Trump's doing pretty well, not as well as he should for a Republican, but pretty well. But again, in the 4th district, where Trump is not doing as well, that's where we're seeing the candidates come out harder against him and show that they're willing to fight him and fight against those policies.
According to 538, Utah is 20.1 points more Republican in the Utah 4th congressional district than the nation overall. Why is this race close? Why is Ben McAdams so close to Mia Love?
There's multiple factors. Ben McAdams has positioned himself over the years as a centrist Democrat who has the support of some Republican mayors, who has been someone who has brokered deals on certain issues and been involved in high-profile issues like our homeless debate. And I think there are certain Utah Republicans who like to think of themselves as open-minded to vote across a ticket. I think that's part of it.
I've heard that. It doesn't make as much sense anymore, but I've heard them called the Diet Coke Republicans.
Exactly. <Yeah. laughs> And then I think you have Mia Love, who is a congresswoman who has been in very tight races and who's had a lot of negative ads against her since her first run. And she's never been as popular among Utah voters as many other Republicans are. In our poll, she only got 75% of Republicans. That is very low. And I think that she is.
Whereas McAdams got 95% of Dems.
I mean, it's very common that you get at least in the high 80s, if not in the low 90s, of people in your own party. 75 is low. And I think that she's always struggled with people in her own party for whatever reason.
It's interesting. I was looking at the sort of tracking the polling on that race. And when you get to October, it's switched. And I'm trying to figure out why that is. What happened in October? Why did all of a sudden it switch? It seemed to be she was in the lead. It's always been fairly tight. But something happened in October, early this month, where her chances really started to drop and his started to rise. Something in particular? I'm just thinking about ads, debates, rhetoric. What do you guys have a sense of it?
I mean, people tune out up until, I think, Labor Day, right, is the official start of campaign season. And that's actually when we really started seeing the two step up their campaigning. McAdams had sort of been doing it over the summer, but really it was Labor Day weekend when we got press releases like, okay, this is it. This is the campaign starting. So I do think there is a little bit of that tune out effect and then tuning back in and saying, and then I think that obviously coincided with the Kavanaugh stuff. And so I think people really thought, hey, I do have skin in this game and I do care about the outcomes of these elections, even though maybe these two representatives won't be voting necessarily on Supreme Court justices. It's about control of Congress at this point.
I think she's made some missteps, too. While I think she's done a very good job, Mia Love has distancing herself from President Trump, her campaign has made some mistakes in fundraising, and I would think that they would probably agree with this after the fact, mistakes on how they've messaged after that came to light. She raised money for a primary fight that never materialized, and federal election officials said that she needed to either give some of that money back or reclassify it. And while her opponent obviously criticized her for it, she came out very strong in defense and kept it in the news for a long time. And I don't know if that was the best strategy for her.
And I think those kind of mistakes really hurt someone in this district. Maybe in one of our other districts where we have really consistent Republican voters, it wouldn't have hurt as much. But we talk about how this is an R plus 20 area. But Utah, even though we talk about how we're so Republican, throughout the 2000s, Jim Matheson was in Congress. In the 1990s, we had Bill Orton. We consistently have a Democrat in office more than we don't in Congress. And so you have older Republicans who had to have voted for a Democrat for us to have had those people in office. And so when you make those kind of mistakes, you're making them to people who might be willing to say, yeah, I'll switch parties. I'll vote for a Democrat this time around. I don't like what's happening.
What did you make of the ads? They've been so terrible. And the negative ones are awful. And then you see the, for both sides, and it's funny, at least the way I'm seeing them, there's one negative crappy ad for McAdams and then one negative crappy ad for Mia Love. And they come right after each other when you're watching the World Series or whatever it is you're doing.
A lot of these ads more recently are not being put out by the campaigns themselves.
Yeah, right.
You're getting
all of those aren't.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Especially these really negative ones as we get close to election day. Did anybody see Ben McAdams' Halloween costume yesterday?
Yes, that was pretty great.
Okay. The shower.
He dressed as himself in the shower from his campaign ad. I thought that was funny.
Pretty self-aware.
I mean, everyone complains about negative ads, but the truth of the matter is they're effective. Mm-hmm. You go drive down I-15 and you have Ben McAdams on a billboard with an equal sign to Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah.
I mean, that's visually very compelling and very understandable for anyone who...
But does that work in Utah?
I
think Utahns like to think it doesn't, but I think it does, right?
I think Utah tries to think that it's better than it is. And I'm not saying that, like, people aren't motivated by a lot of things when they vote, but negative campaigning works.
I completely agree with Julia on this. I've heard my whole career that Utah doesn't like negative ads.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's ridiculous. I think it's always been ridiculous. Campaigns are run by smart people who do a lot of research. They are professionals. If it didn't work, they wouldn't do it.
Well, and what's so interesting also about this campaign this year is we don't have a third party in this district. And so one of these people has to get to 50%. And right now we're still seeing, depending on the poll, anywhere from 6 to 8% undecided. And those negative ads are really hoping that even though a lot of people have already voted, they're going to capture some of those undecideds.
Too close to call. I'm guessing you're all saying.
Wait, definitely too close to call.
Yeah. Let me read a couple of comments we've had. Connie writes this. She said, I've sent in my ballot. I'm excited about Prop 4, the better boundaries proposition. I believe our representatives no longer represent us. And one of the things that's apparently driving Connie is this question of gerrymandering. You want to say anything about that? I mean, this how, and we'll get to Prop 2 and Prop 3 as we go along here. Prop 4, any sense that the sort of indignity about partisan gerrymandering, is that driving factor?
I think there's, as we talked about before, there's some disaffected voters who don't like the partisan game and are looking for some other issue to bring them to the ballot. I think there's people who feel our system isn't the way it should be. And this independent redistricting commission, even though the legislature can just vote it down and do their own thing, gives them something to focus on. I've been surprised. The reporters at the Tribune, when we've called voters about what they're interested in, this comes up a lot. It might not be their first, but it's definitely in the conversation. And I think of the ballot propositions, this one's the most likely to pass.
Yeah, it's polled really well for a long time. And I think it's helped by the fact that we see this also playing out on the national stage, that other states are dealing with gerrymandering and there's all this talk of unfairness. And so I think that trickles down and people start to think, yeah, that does sound like a good idea. Bipartisan is good.
I just want to mention, people talk a lot about the congressional districts in Utah being gerrymandered. And of course, there's a lot of concern about that. But when I talk to the people running the Better Boundaries campaign, they like to focus a lot on the state house races. And they say that an independent redistricting commission could draw lines that make more competitive races in a lot of these, not all, but in some legislative districts, that make the people in the legislature more responsive to voters, so that maybe in the future we won't have three ballot initiatives on the ballot in a midterm election.
Here's a comment from Kendall in South Jordan. Writes, I've had epilepsy my entire life, moved to Salt Lake a year ago from a state with medical marijuana. My seizure activity increased significantly. Prop 2 feels like a life or death choice for me. Feels like a choice of compassion and not party. How much is Prop 2 driving voter interest turnout, do you think?
Well, we did a Radio West show on these propositions.
Yeah.
I think the real question mark for Proposition 2 at this point is because the legislature has come out with a compromise bill that they will be meeting after the election to either pass or not. That has caused some uncertainty around the issue of, does it matter if you show up to vote for Proposition 2 at this point? I think most people would agree that it does matter because it sends a signal to the legislature that they do want action on this issue, regardless of what the fine-tuning and language of that bill looks like.
Yeah, this vote is a vote about leverage. The legislature is going to meet. They are going to take what started with Prop 2 and is now a changed bill, but still would offer medical marijuana to a host of illnesses, including epilepsy. So if it passes, then it sends a signal to the legislature of how serious this is. If it fails, and you're a lawmaker who doesn't like medical marijuana, that just opens the door to whittle this down as much as you want, as much as you physically can. And I think it does complicate it for voters is, well, what does this matter? And we've seen a huge decline in the number of active Latter-day Saints who support this.
Yeah. So if that was a political strategy, that worked.
If that was a political strategy, that was amazingly successful.
Yeah.
We had a majority of active LDS, more than 50% supported this, even after the LDS Church came out and said that they didn't. When they had this compromise, it went down to 28%. And that is the reason this is competitive, and that's the reason Prop 2 might actually fail on Election Day.
So it's not the reason it went down wasn't that all of a sudden they're like, oh, yes, I'm now listening to my leader. It's like, hey, we're going to get this anyway, so I can do both.
My guess, and it's just a guess, is that there are a lot of active LDS people who believe that this should be a medicine for certain illnesses but don't want to go against the leaders of their church. And if they get to do this both ways, the church supports a deal that will be debated afterward. So they get the chance to get the medicine that they want, and they don't have to go against their leaders by voting for this.
The reason I see this passing is because of the other two propositions on the ballot that are polling quite well. That's Medicaid and that's the gerrymandering. And if you have someone who's voting yes on those two, chances are they're going to be voting yes on Proposition 2 as well. So I think the three propositions working together as a more progressive bent to each of them will actually buoy that one over the cusp that it needs to get through. But I think it'll be closer than we thought it was going to be at the beginning.
Let's talk about the state House and Senate races. Matt, we'll start with you. Probably not expecting much in the way of partisan party change in these state races. the Dems may pick up a few seats there?
I think that would probably be the safe bet, as the Democrats pick up two or three, maybe. There are some swing districts that have been close for the last few years. And if you're in an election cycle where there's a lot of other factors that we've been talking about, the blue wave, the propositions that might encourage people who are on a more progressive bent to vote, that might be enough to put over the top a few state House races.
There's House District 32, Salt Lake County. This is Suzanne Harrison, who lost last time to LeVar Christensen by a whisker, like 5 points or something.
A literal handful of votes.
Five votes, not 5 points. Yeah. She's taking another run at this, and she's running against a Republican, Brad Bonham, who's spending a lot of his own money in this race. Is this interesting, this race? What are we thinking is happening here?
I think it is interesting. They're both raising a lot of money. Brad Bonham is, again, pouring a lot of his own money into it. They're both hitting the road on the sidewalks, knocking doors. I think I wouldn't be surprised if she picked this one up this time, since it was so close last time. But again, we'll have to see.
Yeah. And she never stopped campaigning. After she lost in 2016, she just kept campaigning. Yeah.
House District 73 is interesting. This is in San Juan County. Phil Lyman and Marsha Holland. She's an unaffiliated candidate, which is interesting. No Democrat is running in that race. This is a race to replace Representative Mike Noel from Kanab. Matt, what do you think about this race? The Tribune has reported that Holland has raised four times as much money as Phil Lyman.
Yes, I think that can indicate one of two things. Either there's a lot of momentum behind her, or Phil Lyman does not think he needs to raise money to win this race.
Yeah.
And I think
that could be. That could be.
But also, where's that momentum coming from? I wonder where that money is coming from. Is that from Salt Lake? Is that from outside resources? Or is that from San Juan?
Yeah. And there's been a lot of attention on San Juan with the forestry districting down there. And Phil Lyman is a lightning rod of a character. But he's also someone who, if you're a voter in San Juan County, you probably have an opinion on Phil Lyman already.
This district isn't just San Juan County, though. I think this is the biggest House district in the state. And it does include, I think, all of San Juan County, which is a pretty, you know, half Democrat, half Republican. But this district also includes parts of Kane County, Garfield County, really, really Republican rural areas in the state that will probably help Phil Lyman.
It's interesting. Judy Faze, in her coverage of this particular race, said that Marsha Holland said that rural Utahns have grown wary of the culture war politics. Mm. Is that true, do you think? Because he really knows how to throw red meat to the base. I'm wondering if that's true.
Yeah, that's really interesting, especially because so much of that culture war, especially the rhetoric we hear from Trump and some of the national politicians, that plays better in those rural areas. It doesn't play as well with moderate Republicans that are in the suburbs or the exurbs, which honestly, most of Utah's population is suburbs and exurbs. So that's an interesting point.
Also, this part of the state just has its own culture war that might not be the national culture war, right? I mean, this is about public lands control of those lands. It's a very unique conversation.
So we should talk about what might change in the legislature. I mean, the big change is happening is there's this turnover in leadership. Morgan, you've talked a lot about how the session could be dictated by these propositions. What are you seeing there in terms of like leadership turnover and how this election may affect that?
Yeah, so we'll see new Republican leadership because the current leadership is not running for re-election. The people that we're expecting to see step into those roles, probably Brad Wilson and Stuart Adams, they've been in other leadership positions for a while, so there might not be very big substantive policy changes. What we should watch for is their style of leadership, how they come into leadership, whether someone tries to run against them or if they already have their nice cohesive block. And also, interestingly, currently the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate, we have South Salt Lake with quite a bit of power, and that's going to move up to Davis County. It's going to move up to Layton if these two gentlemen take control of the Senate and the House.
Matt, you've said the question is what flavor of Republican it will run the legislature.
there are certain things that won't change. We're going to have a developer House Speaker and a developer Senate President replaced by a developer House Speaker and a developer Senate President. So there's certain issues that are roughly the same. But if you look at someone like our current House Speaker, Greg Hughes, he's a pretty forceful personality. I think we'll get to know these people better, and I don't think you know how someone leads until they're really in the position. How they position themselves against the governor, which there's always friction between the governor and the legislature, what issues they really focus on, and how they work within their own bodies, how they manage other Republicans. It will definitely be different, but exactly how it switches, we'll find out.
Turnout, what do you guys expect finally for turnout? Is it going to be big?
It's going to be huge for Utah. I mean, now we're
for Utah.
Yeah. I mean, the mail-in ballot situation changes it so much that I think we'll have a really significant turnout this year.
And we should mention that under a new law this year, you can actually register at the polls on Election Day, which lifts a huge barrier for someone who maybe didn't know they had to register and they just show up and they're ready to vote. You can actually do that this year. And that could encourage a lot of, again, previously unengaged, disengaged voters. So I'd be interested to see how many people take advantage of that new provision. Mm. And it could lead to that kind of record-setting year that we're sort of anticipating.
I'm really curious to see how many young people turn out. We're hearing a lot about young voters registering in record numbers. I'd be interested to see if that actually does change in Utah compared to previous years and what those young people are voting for.
Yeah. Well, we'll soon see. Nicole Nixon is a political reporter for KUER. Nicole, thanks very much for being with us. Julia Ritchie is our senior political editor. Thank you.
Thanks.
And Matt Canham, senior managing editor of the Salt Lake Tribune. Thank you.
Happy to be here.
For being with us. Morgan Lyon-Cotty of the University of Utah's Hinckley Institute of Politics. Thank you.
It's always a pleasure.
And thanks for those of you who joined us. Radio West is a production of KUER News. Technical direction from Tim Slover. The program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.